This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studios, and the crew is back together. It's been a few months since we were
all of us, at least
since all of us were here at the same time. So,
although shorter than our usual breaks, though, right?
We had a bunch
of shows because of the basketball situation.
And so, Craig, back from Hawaii.
Yep.
Last time I saw you, you were heading to Hawaii. So, and I want to say publicly how much we appreciate your ode to.
Oh, to Noah.
To Noah Langston. Thanks. Webb with the Langston Hughes poem. So
that's so Craig Ross. When I told my wife I was going to do that, she just said, "You're done at that station."
No, but absolutely not.
Anyway, but so it was heartfelt. Let me say that.
I know it was, and so glad that the crew is back together again, and that you're back. So how was your summer? How was your time in Hawaii?
It was great. I'm finishing this book. It's now all up to Seth Fisher. And yesterday I listened to Ed's podcast. They're really good, really interesting. If he wants to plug his podcast.
Thanks, man.
A bit.
All right. So Ed Fang from the Power Rank. So tell folks about the Power Rank and tell folks about your podcast.
Yeah. So my podcast is a football analytics show, and I'm doing a 10-part preview series these 2 weeks. So every weekday, each episode is only 10 minutes of your day. And the one on Michigan dropped this morning. So I take a quick look back at last year and then project this year going forward. And check it out. Football Analytics Show.
All right. And of course, Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, how are you this morning, my man?
Good. Our podcasts are longer.
Oh, my goodness. I did a podcast with Seth that took us 4.5 hours. I think he cut it down to 3.
Yeah, that was your fault, though.
Maybe. I don't know.
He's like, Craig, just talk a lot about poetry, and I'm like, well, that's what you get.
And so guys, talked to Charles Woodson yesterday. He is the latest. He is the latest to kind of offer up his projection for the season. He's projecting, a championship year, and it means so many more, people, not just Michigan folks, but even national pundits, bullish about what Michigan is going to do in the Big Ten this year. So, Craig, our first opportunity. Mm-hmm. To hear your take, are you believing the Michigan hype heading into this season?
I was happy to hear this morning that Charles was pretty much in the same place I'm at. He has my back, so if I'm wrong, I have someone else to blame. But in the Ann Arbor Observer, when it comes out in September, I'm picking Michigan to win the Big Ten championship. Not picking them to win the national championship, as Charles seems to be. But I do think this is the year Michigan will run it out, maybe lose a game, but they'll beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten championship. That's what I wrote in the Observer. I think I wrote that in Brian's magazine, HTTV, which is a terrific piece of work. And also, I think I was the only one, though, in HTTV who thought that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there a game, as you look at this schedule? We went over a lot of games last week, but as you look at Michigan's schedule outside of, the rivalry games, is there a game that you look at that you think is going to be more difficult than a lot of maybe fans are anticipating it being?
Army.
Come on, man. It's Army.
Army, that's what people thought last year when they played Oklahoma. And they took Oklahoma into overtime last year.
I think Army's going to be one of the most overrated teams in all of college football this year. They were like 90th or something in my adjusted yards per play on defense last year. They won. I mean, they got a lot of breaks last year. They weren't as good as their. I think they won 10 games.
I think they were
10-3. They won 10-3 or 11-2 or something like that. They weren't nearly that good when you look at some of the underlying metrics. And they're Army.
So I point to the end of the season, the sandwich game between Michigan State and Ohio State, and I point back to that Indiana game. You know, you would think after last year, and that Michigan, knowing how Indiana wants to try to attack them, probably it won't be as much of a nail biter as we've seen that game be seemingly
almost
for the last
year,
forever, right? But the placement of that game, I thought the emergence of the next really good tailback for Indiana last year. I think he's going to be even better this year. It's not that I think Michigan's going to overlook Indiana, but it is so hard to be as dialed in a week-in, week-out basis, especially when you got Michigan State, then Indiana, then Ohio State. I just think that's going to be, of all the non-rivalry games, I think that's going to be the toughest.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that really stands out to me. Like, I guess Penn State could be better than I think they are, but I really think that their offensive coordinator is kind of a mug now. So.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. We're agreeing a lot these days, yeah, Brian. I'm not buying Penn State as a threatening team.
I mean, they had a new quarterback. They lost a lot on their offensive line. They had, I think they led the Big Ten and possibly the nation in drops last year, and that's still their wide receiver core, so losing Gattis has been a problem. Losing Moorhead, I think, has been a problem. And that really goes back to, remember 2 years ago, they have like the Saquon gun and they get the huge touchdown off of it because Gary rushes upfield because they pass that on him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Really clever thing. And then they keep running that for the rest of the game and they get like 3 yards of carry off of it. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really work except for the one time when it really, really worked. And that's because Joe Moorhead introduced it and it was a new novel thing. They kept running it last year after it had been clear that it's just kind of a wildcat snap that doesn't really do very well. And without Saquon Barkley. So, to me, like, there's always this Wile E. Coyote year you have after you lose a really good coach where it just kind of, like, continues along decently for a year. And then after that is when you look down and you're like, oops. And mm-hmm. I kind of feel like that might be this year for Penn State.
So, do you think, because last year I think we were pretty much in agreement, I think we were, correct me if I'm wrong, that Wisconsin is the favorite in a wide open West, right?
I mean, last year,
last week, that this year Wisconsin should be considered the favorite in a wide open West.
I don't think they should be considered. I mean, they're scheduled alone.
So who do you have as the favorite?
I mean, I got four teams at 20% to win that division.
So
Nebraska.
Okay. What about you?
I got Minnesota.
You got Minnesota winning? Hey, which is looking at the schedule.
I like Northwestern.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I like Northwestern because I think they got the best coaching.
So how does the news that Quintez Cephus has been reinstated? He's not yet been deemed eligible, though. And if ever there was a no-brainer decision for the NCAA to make, this should be one. The guy was acquitted of rape. They kicked him out of school even though he went last fall. He was going in the winter. They expelled him a month before the season or a month before the semester was over because he had violated the campus rules and the policy guide, but then he goes on to be acquitted. Well, so now he's been reinstated. He's credits short of eligibility. You would think that based on his acquittal that they would give him an allowance. They say if he's eligible, he adds a dimension to their offense that otherwise they wouldn't have.
He absolutely does. I mean, he's a legitimate NFL-sized wide receiver. I don't know if he's going to have the separation to play there, but he is definitely two steps above the rest of their guys at that spot. So he would change a lot of things if they can actually get him the ball. If they are starting Jack Cohn at quarterback, I don't know how frequent that's going to be because he was – yeah, and quarterbacks do get better, but he was a long, long way back last year. So he can improve a lot and still be pretty bad.
Well, is this I don't see the NCAA standing in the way. I mean, it's a question. I think the NCAA will say, okay, he can play. But is Wisconsin going to let him do that? Because it's a burden of proof question.
Well, they've already.
Wisconsin has said that?
They've already reinstated him, though.
Okay.
He's on the team. Because he had been expelled from school and removed from the campus. So now he's back. He's on the team. And it said in this article in the Wisconsin State Journal that he must clear up an eligibility issue with the NCAA.
Yeah. I think you're probably right on that the NCAA will allow him to clear that hurdle. I just don't know if an acquittal which doesn't mean he's innocent.
True.
It just means you didn't meet the prosecutor, just didn't meet the burden of proof, or the jury didn't feel like they met the burden.
But yeah, I would think by him being reinstated, though, that you could infer from that.
I don't think you can say that. I mean, you can't say that because he was acquitted, he's not innocent enough to play college football.
Right.
I mean, he didn't settle. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say, all right, well, I'm going to take a wrist slap. He took it all the way to the jury and got acquitted. And so I think you got to respect that.
Well, I'm not saying I don't respect it, and I don't know what the, you know, what the case looked like. I mean, I didn't follow.
It was questionable. They're just reading it. It was questionable to me, just reading it.
Yeah, I mean, should Payne and Appling have played at Michigan State, even though they were never brought to trial at all?
So that's because they had a corrupt prosecutor named Stuart Dunnings III,
right?
Just in the pocket of Michigan State University athletics, so,
right?
Like,
which
that's
isn't
totally
the case.
In this case,
you had two women, two women who went to his apartment. They claimed that they were under the influence, and that and once they made into his apartment, while they were under the influence, he raped one young woman, and then after. So he's with one young woman, and then sometime after that, he goes over and rapes the other young woman. And it just, you know, the chronology of it. So he produced surveillance camera footage of them walking to his apartment, and they kind of were making the argument that, hey, you know, there's the level of intoxication that they're claiming isn't consistent with this, what's shown on this film. And then the idea that one woman would sit idly by while he's raping the other one, and then allow him. Well, anyway,
I don't know. He may not be guilty of anything at all that's criminal. I'm not suggesting that he is. What I am suggesting, there's a burden of proof issue that overlays all these decisions, and so I don't know.
Yeah, I think. Again, I hear what you're saying, and there does seem to be lately this, especially around these issues, this idea that an acquittal, it does not equate to innocence. But for the purposes of him being able to move forward with his life, I mean, what are they going to use as far as his conduct? What are they going to use to say that they should keep him out? And I think, like I said, you can infer from his reinstatement, he's on the team.
Well, if Wisconsin has decided he's going to be on the team, my guess is the NCAA is going to allow him, because there I think your argument is strong.
And so that, for me, if getting back to the you know, what it means for the Big Ten West, Cephas being there, you know, it strengthens my belief that Wisconsin is the favorite on that side.
Yeah, I still like Northwestern. I don't think anybody's going to get the ball to Cephas.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin has questions at quarterback, and their defense wasn't a Wisconsin defense last year.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two huge question marks.
I mean, they had a lot of injury issues, so they're going to start.
I know you mentioned that last week.
They're going to start a guy named Caden Lyles at guard this year, and he was a starting defensive end last year solely because they had no one else to play that spot. So that's kind of tells you the depth of their injury issues that they had last year. And if that doesn't recur, then I think their defense is going to have a bounce back.
So I got a question last week that I want you guys to really spend some time dissecting, because we mentioned it in passing last week, and I guess we should have talked more about it then. But I've been talking about this three safety look that Michigan says they're going to feature more this year, that the likelihood that they're going to be we're going to see more odd stack this season, like we saw a couple of years ago when they started out down in the Cowboy Classic against Florida, and they come out like, wow, you know, that's a different look, and they destroyed, the defense pummeled Florida for much of that day, and we saw that a lot that season. So why is that scheme advantageous for Michigan? Is it a personnel thing? Is it a matchup thing? Explain, to this listener why odd stack for Michigan is a good idea this season.
Okay, historically, the odd stack has been a way for smaller schools to do a weird thing. So it's a three-man line, but the line is more like what you would get in a traditional 4-3, where you have ends outside of the tackles, and then you have a nose tackle who's supposed to pick a gap and be like a one-gap player. So it's not like 3-4 where you have like this battleship nose tackle like all of Segapulu or the kid for Colorado a couple years back.
So in ordinary 3-4s, is that always, is he always two gapping the nose tackle, or is that
usually I mean that's okay. And then what you do to make up for the fact that you're running a 4-3 with only three guys on the line is you pick one of your linebackers and you have him charge at the line of scrimmage and kind of insert himself in one of those gaps. And Michigan's problem with it a couple years back when they were running against Florida is that Furbush was always picking the same gap, and you were always blitzing Furbush and only Furbush. So it became pretty predictable, and then when Michigan ran it out, like if you knew it was coming, you got gashed on the ground. And that's been Michigan's problem with it, is that except in that Florida game, whenever they bring out the three-man line in the stack, they get hammered on the ground. Now, Uche is a guy who might be able to get over a gap to give you some more flexibility. Josh Ross is a bigger linebacker who might be better able to act as that quasi-bonus DL. And then you have the unpredictability that the stack relies on to actually like get people down.
Yeah, and that was the thing that and it's a great observation with you with Furbush that I didn't even see, that they were shooting him in the same gap every single time, because ideally, what it gives you is the lack of being the unpredictability when it comes to they don't know where that linebacker is coming. They don't know where that fourth guy is coming from.
And like I referred to Furbush as a defensive fullback at that point, because what his goal was he was gonna run at an offensive lineman, shove him out of the way, and then looping around came Devin Bush. And so he had like 2-3 sacks in that game. It was just a complete demon, and Furbush was the guy who was paving the way for that. So that was a great scheme for one game. Now, how can you make that something that you do consistently over the course of the season, because your defensive tackle situation is not great? I don't know. It's an interesting question. It's definitely something you need to explore, because Josh Uche may be one of your best players.
Right.
That's a really good point, because Campanelli said that Uche has been really good and mentioned that he could be on the field every down. And he said he could see Michigan playing a Viper and a Sam, which sounds...
That's a stack.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
That's a stack.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds a little bit like a stack. And Campanelli said that in his interview this week. And so it sounded to me like they really want Uche on the field as much as they can get him on the field. And if that's the case, you're starting to be someplace in the stack.
I mean, four of your best players on defense are going to be Pay, Hutchinson, Dana, and Uche. And you can only put two of those on the guys on the field at the same time if you're in a 4-3.
Are you so sure about Dana?
I mean, Dana had, like, Dana did work at Central Michigan. So he's going to be, he could have gone back to Central Michigan and been a mid-round pick.
So, you know who he reminds me of? You guys remember Shante Orr?
Yes.
That's who he reminds me of.
Yeah, and he had 7-8 sacks his final year at Michigan.
Wait, so if those are your four best players, you have to put LeVert Hill in one of your best players.
No, I didn't say best. I said some of your best offensive players. The best guys in your front seven. So if you can get three of those guys on the field consistently instead of two, and you can actually like defend the run like that, then that's could be your base. But that's the big question, is like, because they haven't done that so far. They run out of the three-man line and they get gashed.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't yet know. I couldn't predict for you how much they're going to do it. I'm not ready to say it's going to be their base defense, but it is definitely a package that I expect that we'll see early in the season. It won't be. Now we saw a little bit of it. They kind of broke out of maybe a down or two against Ohio State when they were trying to find some things. But I think I remember being at that Florida game, was like, wow, look at that. I think we'll see it early in the season, and it shouldn't come as a surprise.
Well, I mean, you should mention that Florida had horrible issues on their offensive line during that game.
There were a lot of different defensive approaches that could have gotten after Florida in that game.
And then also, I mean, if you're playing an extra safety, you have to like your talent back there, right?
Absolutely.
So that's got to say good things about Dax Hill, I presume.
Well, this is Brad Hawkins right now.
This is just a nickel package, right? Where it's Brad Hawkins is the slot guy because you don't have enough corners.
Well, I see. I don't know that it's just. Yeah. I don't know that it's just about not having enough corners.
I mean, I heard you talking about Hawkins coming in, and I'm kind of with you, but also they don't have enough corners.
Yeah.
Well. I mean, I heard you talk on that point this morning about how you were most concerned about safety coming into the season. Mm-hmm. And Brian was talking
interior
D line. Whereas I'm most concerned about the corners.
Well, once Ambry goes out, then that changes the equation.
And so, right, it does. It does. Injury affects things, but I'm pretty optimistic about Ambry's return. His weight.
They said 185, which is 16 pounds up over last year. So
he's gotten up. At least some of the guys are saying he's up in the 180s now. And you know, we have a picture. He looks like he's as frail as they were describing him as being. He's not that anymore. I mean, he's definitely added some weight back. I'm not expecting. This is my personal belief. I'm not expecting him to be a factor in the first couple of games. I still think that a reasonable expectation is after the bye week, so the third game against Wisconsin. That's not anything they're saying. That's just my personal belief.
Well, that would be good because, I don't know if we'll need him in game one or two. Yeah.
All right, let's get to a break. We'll pick it up on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA at the Ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com here. The MGO Blog Roundtable crew, Craig Ross to my right. Right across from me, we have Brian Cook from MGO Blog. And to my left, we have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. And as we were close, I think I cut you off, Craig.
I don't think.
You know,
you don't look like you've been to sleep for like 3 days.
What are you talking about?
He was in a better mood last week, Craig.
I put him in a cranky mood just by my presence.
I'm writing a lot of words. It's stressful.
Okay.
Last week, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost crunch time. It's crunch time, though. And plus, Craig is back, so there's that.
Okay. I just like conflict, too.
Hey, guys, it is...
No, but it was a very conflict-free show last week, Brian.
It was weird. Come on, Ed. Don't make it worse.
For us, it was... Sam, it's a conflict-free show last week.
It was
a very good show. It was good.
So,
were you not here?
I was in Cincinnati watching the.
Oh, that's right.
I was watching the tennis tournament in Cincinnati. Right. We're on the way back.
All right. So I mean, so we heard from Charles Woodson. His expectations for Shea Patterson are through the roof. And I've been saying, and normally I make it a point to try to not place expectations that are unfair on guys. I'm most focused on that with freshmen. Last year when Shea came in, said, look, remember what he's coming from. Remember the offense that he's coming from, what he's going into, where he's going to have more free snap responsibilities. Route trees are more intricate. He has to, as far as his read progressions are concerned, those are more complicated and elaborate. And he's coming off of a leg injury. These are all things that should make you say, this guy's not he's not Heisman Trophy contender this year. That was my statement heading into last year. This year, okay, I'm saying expectations for him should be all Big Ten level, all Big Ten caliber Heisman Trophy race. Not favorite, but Heisman Trophy race. I think with a year on campus, I think with the offense they're going into, and I think with the weapons he has around him, that those are fair expectations for Shea Patterson. What say you?
So the two things that Shea Patterson didn't do that well last year were throw into zones, especially zones with 7 and 8 guys in them, and then be able to sit in the pocket long enough to trust his protection and throw downfield. And if you're running a lot of RPOs, it's not about like, oh, I got to figure out like if this is a cover two or a cover three. It's like, what's this linebacker doing?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're running a lot of RPOs, you're not worried about like whether the protection is going to hold up. You're just getting these throws out quick. So he's super accurate. He's really good with making the RPO reads. He progressed as a runner, especially making decisions about halfway through the year. And all of the things that Gattis wants to do in his offense are now Patterson's wheelhouse. So I think that is reasonable. Like, he's going to be in the conversation to be in New York. And he's going to be in the conversation to watch someone give the Heisman Trophy to either Tua or Trevor Lawrence.
Right. I agree. Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but when I look around and I see them talking about Martinez from Nebraska,
he's real good.
But I would be surprised if he has a a body of work, which is not just your personal accomplishments. It's also your team accomplishments. I would be surprised if his body of work is better than Shea Patterson's.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like everything that Shea brings to the table. I mean, one thing I would say, Brian, is like, you know, I think Shea, for at least the first half of the season, had reason to doubt his pass protection
the way they had gone before.
I think that's going to change, right? I mean, four of those guys made all conference. I think the pass protection should get even better this year.
I think that it should, but just his comfort level and his command level of the offense was not where it needed to be. It wasn't that far off. I mean, I've spent large portions of the year being like, Shea Patterson is really frustrating because he's got all the tools, but just a little bit off here, and here. And, like, I think another year, a better offense, I think will be better.
Well, and when we talk about Patterson, we talk about the guy is accurate, right? Which is the first thing I look for in a quarterback. And I was just doing some research on Oregon because they're going to be on one of my podcast series. And you talk about Justin Herbert, and the first thing they say is, he's 6'6". He's an athlete. Oh, right, and he's a good passer. And that's the kind of stuff that's like, you know, are we sure about that? And I obviously get what the NFL hype is about him. And I think he is a good passer. He's no Josh Allen. But I want my quarterback to be an accurate passer. And Shea Patterson brings that to the table. He's got the weapons.
Yeah, and he has the weapons is really the case. I mean, if we talked about places where we have concerns about depth or in particular, but the place where you shouldn't be concerned is wide receiver, because they're loaded. And and the noise, of course, and I think Sam posted this on your board yesterday or in the last day or two, is that the big noise is Ronnie Bell.
Yes, it is.
And
yes, it is.
And given that you've got DPJ and Nico Collins, who I think are both NFL wide receivers, and Tariq Black, who I think has a chance to be an NFL wide receiver, and real exciting guys like Sanders Still and Giles Jackson, not Giles, I think, Giles.
It's Giles.
Okay. and yet the noise is Ronnie Bell. And so I don't know if that's just coach talk or I don't know if that's real. I don't think so. Okay.
Okay, but like it's okay. Ronnie Bell's gonna be real good, but he's gonna be real good next year, right? Like,
is that an opportunity?
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna beat out DPJ or Nico Collins, and I think that the point that we should be seizing upon here is what Josh Gattis says about you're gonna see a lot of guys put up numbers in this offense. And Ronnie Bell, based on how he's looking in fall camp, is one of those guys you should expect to really register. And what does that mean? Look at Alabama and look at how many guys put up numbers in their offense last year. Now, am I saying that Michigan is going to have five receivers with 40 or more receptions and two more with 20 plus receptions? No, but can they be somewhere between what they were and what Alabama is? Yeah, I think they will be. I think they will be.
Yeah,
So big plays. He is not only a jet sweep crossing pattern guy. He's a stretch the field guy for him too. At least if practice is a guy.
He caught that off balance bomb against Nebraska.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
So he's obviously got some upside there. So the problem with that is that I think Nico Collins needs like 150 targets this year. He had 50 targets last year, 51, and he was 81% on contested catches. He had no drops. And in the very first game, he blazed by Julian Love, who was like a guy who went in the fourth round last year. So like to have that guy get 50 targets in season.
That was second highest on the team, though.
It was second highest on the team, but Minnesota's number two wide receiver had 95 targets. There are four different Indiana Hoosiers who had more targets than Nico frickin' Collins. Nico Collins needs the ball.
Tariq Black needs to stay healthy.
Sure, I don't have the targets for Alabama last year, but Jerry Jeudy was their leading receiver with 68 receptions for 1,315 yards and 14 touchdowns. Their next receiver, in terms of number of receptions, was Henry Ruggs with 46 receptions for 741 yards and 11 touchdowns. Their third receiver had 45 receptions for 848 yards and 7 touchdowns. Their fourth receiver was Irv Smith, their tight end, had 44 receptions, 710 yards, 7 touchdowns. And then their fifth guy, Devontae Smith, had 42 receptions, 693 yards, and six touchdowns.
And wait a minute.
All those guys have more yards than every Michigan receiver last year.
Like, dude. So when Josh says, we spread the ball, and then their two running backs both had 20 or more receptions.
Yeah.
So he's like, this offense gets the ball in the hands of a lot of guys. You won't just have just one or two guys eating in this offense. Everyone's going to eat.
But it's kind of like, I need more
college. Now, I know Bell was a basketball player primarily. Isn't that right? In high school? Or
yes. Well, I mean, he played both, but he was going to...
Did he play any corner?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I haven't heard anything.
I mean, Michigan's going to lose two of these guys to the NFL next year. You need receivers, and he's got to be one of them.
Yeah, you also need corners right now.
Yeah, but he's not.
He's not going to switch over.
I'm not
now.
Saying that. I just it's a question. It's not an answer.
Kind of sounds like you're saying it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you'd be more inclined to make some moves with guys at the safety spot than you would grabbing one of your receivers and trying to teach him.
Yeah. All of a sudden to play corner. Yeah.
None of that's going to help this year. None of it.
So we got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. One of the things that I threw at Ira yesterday, and this is more in Ed's wheelhouse. I want you other guys, you two to chime in as well, Brian and of course Craig. But the Dark Horse Championship contenders, the Dark Horse candidates. So they gave seven teams to say remove them from consideration. This was on MSN. So remove seven teams from consideration, and those seven teams were them pulling it back up right now. It was obviously Bama, Clemson, Michigan, Ohio State was in that mix, Oklahoma, Georgia. Notre Dame, Georgia. So those were the seven. So outside of those seven, get six teams that are dark horse candidates. These are not unrealistic teams to wind up in the playoff. Okay. And so I'll give you the ones that I can remember off the top of my head because the article isn't coming up. LSU.
Sure.
They had in there, and I remember LSU, they got to go to Bama.
Yep.
And, you know, we got it. And look at what they lost defensively.
They got enough back on it. I mean, Dave Aranda's going to figure that out. He's got enough back that I can't think they fall too much.
They won't fall too much, but is their offense good enough?
No.
Okay. So there we go.
Well,
there
I mean, week two, LSU, Texas. I mean, Texas is probably going to be on your list,
Texas
too, right?
Texas is on the list, too.
Texas is way overrated. Way, 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 way overrated.
I thought
overrated.
You was going to say that. When
you
we
didn't
about
say the exact thing.
Way overrated.
So, yeah, Texas
you throw
is on
Texas
the list.
Off that list. I put Auburn on that list.
You might have even got that many ways in there, too, when you said Ed was going to say they were going to.
You know, I've been writing about three overrated college football teams for about 12 years. 12 teams, 4 years. I haven't felt as confident about anything as Texas this year.
All right. Another team that they put on that list, they put Oregon on the list.
And they got upside. I mean, they need to take a leap on both sides of the ball to even start to be in that conversation. And we find out, you know, 10 days from now, can they go across the country and beat Auburn? I don't think they can do it.
Yeah, their schedule seems really, really prohibitive when it comes to contention for them. Ira, you mentioned Washington, right?
Washington.
And Washington's schedule looks like it's easier.
Yeah. Well, in Washington, you have a quarterback that beat out Jake Fromm for the job 1 year.
Mm-hmm. But
I don't know how much that means. But
you lost a ton defensively, and right. then Gaskin. Gaskin was a senior, wasn't he? The running back?
I think he's back.
Or is he back? Okay, I thought he was a senior.
I thought he was back.
So,
don't we open there next year? I think Michigan opens at Washington in Seattle next year.
No, Gaskin was a senior last year.
Gaskin was a senior, yeah. So they don't have him. So that's the schedule is better, but I look at what they lost, and it has me kind of questioning them a bit. Ira was, like you are about Texas, Ira was like this about, they put UCF on their list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're overrated too.
They put them as a dark horse playoff team.
So they were, you know, top five 2 years ago in offense, top 10 when I look at adjusted yards per play. You think Brandon Wimbush can keep that team in the same? Hey, the guy who can't complete a slant?
Will a group five team ever be in a playoff?
No. Well, I mean, if you go undefeated and you have two big out-of-conference wins and your conference doesn't completely suck that year.
No, not going to happen.
Probably no.
All right.
I got Utah.
Utah's on this list.
Yeah.
Utah's on this list.
Utah has a bear of a defensive line, and that's always a good start.
What about USC or Florida State?
No. Yeah, that was, no. You're clearly joking, right?
I don't know. I don't have any idea what they
Well,
have.
I mean, I think the interesting team outside that is Auburn, because their defense is going to be elite this year, and they got a lot coming back on the line. They just have no idea what they're going to get at the quarterback position, which is kind of important.
Well, they just named a true freshman as their starting quarterback, and I know that Trevor Lawrence happened last year, but I don't think that's a good sign that
right.
Bo Nix is like your starting quarterback. That's not great.
What if Army beats Michigan and runs it out?
Why would we talk about that?
I'm not saying.
We gotta stop scheduling service academies. There was a Don Brown quote about how he's been working on this game since January, and what
a
waste.
No.
Well, what a waste of time.
Oh, yeah, he said that. He said he'd be practicing every day since the spring.
What a waste.
For preparing for Army.
Play teams that have the same offense as Ohio frickin' State.
Yeah.
And then, like, invite the flyover guys and the, like, parachute guys, too.
I was looking at Auburn's schedule real quick. They obviously, you said they have to go and they play Oregon.
They're in Atlanta.
They're at A&M. They're at Florida. They're at LSU.
I mean, so brutal.
It's a brutal.
Well, they got a game against Georgia.
And then they have Georgia and Alabama in the last 3 weeks of the season. So it's like, dude,
there's S&P Plus, which is Bill Connolly's thing. Like they rate teams, and they're like, it's them and South Carolina have like the biggest gaps between. Where they're ranked and their expected record. They're both expected to go like 7-5, and I think Auburn is like the eighth best team in the country.
Yeah. Well, South Carolina gets the top three teams. There's kind of a consensus top three teams, right? Alabama, Clemson, Georgia.
Yeah.
They got to play all of them.
Yeah. The sixth team on MSN's list was Syracuse.
No. No, thank you. Pass.
I'll pass. I'd rather talk about like Nebraska. And I think that's a terrible pick, but it'd be better than Syracuse.
My pick is still USC.
USC?
Yes.
Which USC?
Can you make the case for USC, Craig?
Clay Helton loves you.
Yeah. Clay Helton is getting left on a tarmac midseason.
Do you think Swan would do that to him?
Have you seen their recruiting?
They are 60th
in the country.
I saw them right there with MSU.
Folks, can you feel the love in the room? Can you feel the crew being back together?
Wait, USC?
It's so great.
USC.
It's so great.
Is that just because they haven't
Ira's giving me the death stare. He's saying, get off the air. So we are getting off the air right now. More MGo Blogger Roundtable next week. Same time, same place. Here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.